I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. How's it going? Do you live around here? Sure hope we don't have a winter like last year. Hey, I really like your shoes. Where'd you get them? Did you see that game last night? Small talk. Some people enjoy it and are really good at it, while others find it boring and exhausting. Today in Radio Times, we want to look at all sides of small talk. That's the chit-chat that happens at a party, at the water cooler, in the supermarket line, on the subway, and we have a trio of guests who have joined us. Elizabeth Bernstein is a Wall Street Journal writer who writes the Bonds column. Elizabeth Bernstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. We need to bring her up. Let's try Lori Helgo. She's a psychologist, author of Introvert Power, Why Your Inner Life is Your Hidden Strength. Lori Helgo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. And we need to fix that. This is, let's try for number three. We have Chris Collin, co-author of What to Talk About, and he's joining us by Skype from San Francisco. Chris Collin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. So, conversation's going well.
Exactly. One out of three ain't bad. Something to talk about, right?
I think we're off to the races already. Now we can talk about what happened with the first two, with Laurie and Elizabeth.
Well, exactly. And I can say to you that I'm looking at two engineers looking at the board, and they are madly trying to figure out where our other two guests are. So here we go. Let me ask you just a couple of questions before we get our other guests on the air. And I should give the full name of your book, because it's What to Talk About on a Plane at a Cocktail Party in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. And again, you teach writing at the San Francisco Writer's Grotto. From your perspective, and you've actually looked at small talk, what do you think good small talkers have that makes them so good at what they do?
Well, I should say the book is half serious and about three quarters absurd.
I got that. No, I got that.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because I think the trick to small talk is to remember that the whole enterprise is sort of absurd. We're a funny species. And if you can sort of bear that in mind, I think it sort of takes some of the pressure off, and you can sort of try to enjoy it a little more. Small talk, you know, some people think it's boring, some people think it's important. I think it's both. I think it's nothing more than an on-ramp, and, you know, you don't want to do your whole drive on the on-ramp, but
right.
You need it to get to the highway. So yeah, it's an important part of our little ritual.
And do you think you're pretty good at it, Chris?
I think I'm sometimes good and sometimes terrible, like everyone. I think that that's sort of why I wrote the book, is because I wanted to. It was sort of a way.
I don't know. We have all sorts of weird sounds happening, and we seem to have lost Chris Collin. So this is a great way to start a show on small talk. No, it seems like you are there, Chris. But let me see if I can check in with our other guests and see if they are there. Elizabeth Bernstein,
okay.
Are you with us on Radio Times?
I'm here.
You're very good. And also, Lori Helgo, are you here as well?
I'm here, Marty.
Okay, good. Everyone is here, and we can all have this conversation about small talk. Elizabeth, let me go to you. And I was talking with Chris about his perspective on small talk, which is it's both sort of silly and important. What is your view of small talk?
It's somewhat similar. I think it's quite important, small talk. I think it's social grease, and it allows us to get to know people and to get along in society and to start to form relationships. And for that reason, I think even though it seems like something quite silly, it's actually pretty important.
And do you think you're pretty good at it? You yourself?
I've been told I can talk to a rock. So, no, I think I am, but if I have a problem, I'm sure I err on the side of talking too much.
Ah, and I do want to pick up on that. Lori, let me get you in on the conversation, because you have really a different perspective on, or perhaps it's the introvert's perspective on small talk. What is that?
Right. Well, from the introvert's perspective, first thing, there's nothing that makes an introvert want to turn around and run the other way than the word small talk. And I actually look at the words. Small implies quick, clipped, efficient conversation, which is not the way introverts like to converse. We are internal processors. We like to think before we speak. So the pressure to make yourself known and to meet somebody on, you know, a short kind of efficient time frame is challenging. And talk, the word talk, kind of emphasis output rather than exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And talk is taxing for an introvert. We like to have things, again, work them out inside and then speak them. So I think there's some problems with even the way we label small talk. I think an introvert might not run so quickly if we used a term like opening conversation, something that gave us a little room to breathe.
Well, let me ask you, Laura. I mean, if you're standing, let's say, in the supermarket line, do you don't want to talk, or it feels like I don't want to have just some silly conversation about the weather if it's snowing outside? It just doesn't seem like an interesting enough conversation to you?
That may be. In the grocery line, I may not have such a problem because I know it's very short-lived, and I like to be pleasant like the next person. I was raised as a pastor's kid, so I was trained in being pleasant. But at the same time, I think in a situation, a mingling kind of situation, and in a lot of situations, introverts are gauging their energy. As I said, talk is taxing. So where do we want to invest that energy? And if we think, am I ever going to see this person again? And we tend to be selective about relationships mm-hmm. as well. Do I really want to put out this energy that's going to leave me a little drained?
Well, let me go back to you, Elizabeth. And I mean, there seems to me there's different kinds of small talk or chit chat. I mean, there is the stuff that happens in a supermarket line, or if you're, you know, waiting for a train and something happens, you can turn to the person next to you. And then there's the chit chat if you get invited to a party of people you don't really know. You can't necessarily just flee out the door, and you're there to socialize and make conversation.
Exactly. I think that there are two different ways of thinking about this, and two different sort of opportunities for it, or maybe more than two. But I think that the actual goal of small talk is the same, and you want to make other people around you comfortable. That's really one of the main goals, and that's why I called it social grief. And you also want to try to get to know people, and you never know. The person in the line behind you in the supermarket may be just as interesting to meet as a person at a cocktail party.
And to you, Chris, your book has some interesting sort of those opening lines. Instead of saying, where are you from, you might want to try, what's the strangest thing about where you grew up? That there are sort of variations on those cliched open lines that people might want to be thinking about.
Yeah, well, one thing that we recommend is instead of asking for answers, which can be sort of a dead end, ask for a story. I think that can work with introverts and extroverts alike. It's hard to think on the spot, and especially if you're not warmed up yet conversationally. And if you ask for a story, whether about someone's childhood or something simple like, I don't know, what'd you do before you got to the party tonight? What's your process for getting ready for a cocktail party? You know, it sounds sort of mundane, but I actually think interesting things come out in little details like that. And when people start delivering a narrative, you can sort of get things cooking a little bit.
Well, let me try that out on you, Laurie. I mean, would that be, as you're here representing all introverts, of course, but would that be a kind of conversation an introvert might want to engage in, which is not, you know, what do you do, but tell me something about what it is that you do?
Yes, yes, and I love that. And I think part of the problem is that we're not so good. I think we tend to ask horrible questions in our culture, ones that don't get to stories. They get to products. They get to resumes. Even the question, how are you, asks for kind of an evaluation. And if someone asks me that, I'm like, okay, give me a minute. Let me consult with myself.
Really?
Think about it, because another thing about introverts is we do not want to, talk can be distracting. We have a very active inner process. Our brains actually react more to what external stimulation. There's more thought that goes on, and so that if you want you know, a quick response, we might be flummoxed right at that point. And we don't want to abandon our internal process. So it's like we have to go dig inside a minute. And that may seem like we're being rude or non-responsive when we're actually thinking. So, yeah, I think a story gives a lot more room for process.
Elizabeth, let me go back to you. And you talk about part of small talk is to make the other person comfortable. And since you write for the Wall Street Journal, I'm assuming it being good at small talk can be good for business or good for one's career. Can you talk a bit about that?
It can. It allows you, as we're talking about, it allows you to get to know people, and it allows you to sort of draw them out. One of my main tips for small talk would be try to ask questions about the other person. And I agree, you know, how are you is both a question that sort of stalls the person receiving it. What am I going to say? And also, it seems very, disingenuous. Nobody wants to really know how you are. They want you to say fine. And so, you know, but asking about a story or asking something like, oh, you know, what do you do for fun instead of what do you do for work? You know, something that's a little unusual that might draw them out. This allows us to start building some kind of relationship. And certainly if it's a work one or if it's a coworker you need to work with, if you want to, you know, make a deal with somebody, if you want to get a job, these are skills important in job interviews. So sort of having some tools in your pocket to work with, even if you don't like small talk and or aren't comfortable with it, certainly will serve you well, I think.
Well, back to you, Chris, and back to your book. This is under cold openings. This is one that I thought was pretty funny. One of the cold openings, you meet someone you say to them, I bet your spirit animal is an attic raccoon.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how I would respond if someone that said that to me, but I probably would engage them in some way.
That's from the higher level small talk. No, so, you know, some of the stuff in the book is silly,
yes.
But the larger point is, you know, I think I started to get a little better at small talk or conversation in general when I sort of changed the way I thought about it. I think a lot of us go into a cocktail party or a dinner party or any kind of mixer or, I don't know, the checkout line, sort of thinking, oh God, how am I going to survive this? Or how can I get through this without blowing it? And, you know, I think we lose sight of the fact that these can be fun things or interesting exchanges. And when you think, okay, how can I actually get something out of this and have a memorable exchange? And who, you know, it sort of triggers all these other questions. Who am I? What do I care about? Mm-hmm. What do I like to learn about people? And if you can sort of quell that initial panic that sometimes accompanies small talk, you can sort of tune into what you actually do want to know about this person.
Well, let's
instead of just how are they, you know, what do they do, like you said, for fun or, you know, anything like that.
And I want to pick up on that after this very short break. We are talking about small talk in this hour of Radio Times. Are you good at it? Is it something you don't like to do? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about all sides of small talk, the benefits of small talk, how to do it effectively, and why some might dislike it. Let me reintroduce our guests. Elizabeth Bernstein is a Wall Street Journal columnist, writes the Bonds column for the paper. Lori Helgo is a psychologist, author of a book called Introvert Power, Why Your Inner Life is Your Hidden Strength. And Chris Collin is co-author of a book called What to Talk About on a Plane at a Cocktail Party in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. He also teaches writing at the San Francisco Writer's Grotto. And we want to hear from you. Don't be shy. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. You know, Laura, I was thinking if I met you at a party and you said to me, I hate small talk, that would be a great opener, don't you think, for a conversation?
Oh, you know, it would be wonderful. And I do encourage introverts to expose more of what you have to say, because so often it is a relief to others. I had a reader who talked to me about a company picnic, and, you know, that everybody was secretly kind of dreading. And she discovered this by finally telling her boss, you know, I just hate these events. And he said, oh, I do too.
You're not alone,
and,
right?
And exactly. I think if we even can ask that old question, you know, a penny for your thoughts. Mm. What are you thinking instead of what do you do, which is a distancing question, we might be able to get more to a real conversation.
Elizabeth, let me go back to you. And Chris talked about kind of having an attitude adjustment about small talk. How do you suggest people do that? And again, because you work at the Wall Street Journal, I'm thinking about, you know, how this plays out in business. But I know people who say, I just hate small talk. I hate going to parties at small talk. Maybe it's even a work, you know, Christmas party or something like that. I just hate to do it. How do you reframe that?
I think so many people do feel that, more people than we realize. And, you know, I love what you were just talking about with Lori, that, you know, just ask, you know, hey, you know, oh, I hate this. I think a lot of people, as she's saying, will be very relieved. I think people, extroverts who love it, will be surprised and intrigued, like, wow, you hate this? Like, oh, and it gives them, finally, they stop talking about themselves and they will ask you why, and it will, it hopefully would lead to something. So if you had to adjust your attitude, because honestly, sometimes we have to go to the Christmas party or the work retreat or a job interview, whatever it is. You know, you want to, maybe I would say, could you go at it with some curiosity? Like, I wonder if, you know, I could get to know somebody tonight. I wonder, mm-hmm. you know, rather than worried, one thing I think people who aren't good at small talk are, people are so worried about is, you know, how will I come across? You know, they're going to see I'm uncomfortable. First of all, who cares? Secondly, everybody else is feeling that way. People are just self-absorbed. So I wonder if you sort of set yourself a challenge. I have to go to this Christmas party tonight. You know what? I'm going to see if there's one person there I can have, like, a decent, real conversation with. That's my goal for the evening. And then maybe that'll draw you out. Something like that, having, like, a mini goal for yourself of a real connection.
Well, Chris, I want to hear from all three of you, and certainly it's embedded in your book, which is actually quite funny and silly at times, which is focusing on the other person. And if you're self-conscious, then obviously the focus is on yourself. But if you can focus your attention and your questions on that other person, that might make you feel more relaxed, and it also might be a good conversation starter.
Yeah, look, I mean, we all know the answer, right? You just got to listen to people, but we forget it. It's so easy to forget. We think we need to have a dozen conversation starters all ready to go. But the truth is, the best conversationalists are just people who are good listeners and can ask questions that are sincere, and, you know, they come from somewhere genuine, a real curiosity. You know, let's say I'm just to pick on Elizabeth.
Sure.
We end up at a cocktail party rather than saying, so what do you do at the journal? Maybe I would say, okay, gosh, I wonder what's the first thing you do when you get to the office in the morning? Tell me about the first 10 minutes. I mean, if you can sort of drill down into something that you're, you know, that's a little different and it gives you something concrete to talk about, and that you actually are sort of wondering about, I don't know, does she flip on the computer? Does she make phone calls? Does she go...
Gossip somewhere?
Gossip somewhere, exactly, yeah. So, you know, and then pretty soon you're talking about how she got into that
right.
And then her deepest, darkest secrets, which is what we all want to talk about anyways at some level.
Elizabeth, what do you do those first 10 minutes you get to work?
Oh, I work from home. So
you work from home.
I usually pour myself a second cup of coffee.
There you go.
I have to say I check Facebook, so I hate to say that.
No, hey, you know, you're not alone in that. Lori, do you think, is there a gender difference here? Do you think women are better at small talk, men better at small talk? Does it divide that way? And then it looks like we've got an explosion of phone calls here. But I'm curious, whether you think there's some kind of gender issue?
I think that women are socialized to be talkers, and there is some evidence that girls talk sooner than boys. And so I think the fact is that men get by with being introverts more easily or openly introverted. They're considered the strong, silent type. Women can be seen as snobs if they don't engage. So I think women have, female introverts often have a bigger challenge in terms of how, you know, a more reserved response is looked at. The other thought about what to talk about. So we in our culture are so people focused, and studies of it for introverts, looking at pictures of faces is no more compelling than looking at pictures of flowers. We are very idea-focused, and so it also can be helpful to talk about an idea. Mm. What do you think of this music? You know, is this a genre you like that's playing at a party? Something that's impersonal can be two people side by side looking at an idea together, which can be very, mm-hmm. allow a lot of breathing space and open up new insights.
So the idea that Chris used of asking Elizabeth, you know, what's the first couple of things you do when you get to work, does that seem kind of like, who cares, Laurie, for an introvert?
No, I like that. I like that. And I like the novelty of it. And I think it can open a door. I just think that some introverts can be very private. And so that may not be a trigger for an opening. For me, I'd love that question, because I actually do like to talk about myself.
Well,
introverts aren't one thing.
I got you. No, I totally get it. Actually, we have an email from Sally, says that I have found that too many people use the word I too much during a conversation. Generally, people can engage in a 50-50 conversation, meaning I and you. Do you agree with that, Elizabeth?
I do. I think people love to talk about themselves. They forget, you know, you get going and the other person's being polite, they're nodding and hopefully smiling at you, and they might just be waiting for the end of your story, but they're giving you some sort of cues that, you know, you may interpret as, yes, that they're fascinated by me, I'm going to keep talking. So I do think that's a huge danger, is we love to talk about ourselves, all of us, really. And, you know, we just go on and on. And what Chris was saying is, you know, a good conversationalist is someone who's a good listener. If you can let them talk about themselves, they're going to think you're fascinating.
Chris, anything you want to add to that? Then I do want to get to our callers.
Here's a trick.
Okay.
And it gets away from talking about oneself or the other person, doesn't focus too much on individuals. I found it very disarming to admit to my vast ignorance in a social gathering. I think there's a lot of pressure sometimes that people feel to be knowledgeable or appear knowledgeable or smart, and I think that can be paralyzing. And I love to open up about how much I don't know about so many things. And I find that's sort of, it's disarming, and it cuts through that pressure and sometimes sort of a machismo that you can find certainly with some kinds of guys who like to bloviate about all they know. So if I'm at in a party or something, rather than talking about, oh, I don't know, something I have to say about the election last night, maybe I'll just say, you know what? I have been faking it for years. I really don't understand how the Electoral College works. And I find that 9 times out of 10, the other person says, oh, my God, yeah. Or you know, maybe they know how that works, but they'll admit that they don't really know what thunder is. How does thunder work? And pretty soon you're admitting all the things you don't know. And it's really liberating. And being exposed like that can sort of lead the conversation to interesting places.
But, Chris, if you're talking to someone who's an expert in the Electoral College, they could give you a 30-minute dissertation on that. Is that the kind of conversation you want to have?
I every now and then you get an expert and you really do want to hear what they have to say, but often 30 minutes is about 29 minutes too long in my book.
I agree.
One thing I get asked a lot is, how do you end a conversation? Either a boring one or a really nice one that you're just sort of done with. In my experience, the answer is the same in both cases. It was so nice talking with you.
Right. Exactly. And then moving on, let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. We're talking about small talk in this hour of Radio Times. Chris Collin, co-author of What to Talk About on a Plane at a Cocktail Party in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. Laurie Helgo, a psychologist and author of Introvert Power, Why Your Inner Life is Your Hidden Strength. And Elizabeth Bernstein, she's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Her column is called Bonds. And we have a full bank of calls here at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Suzanne from Sellersville to join us on Radio Times. Suzanne, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm finding this talk fascinating.
Great.
Because after 30 years of marriage, I'm a total extrovert and my husband is an introvert. So we've had to learn to adjust, and I've had to learn to appreciate that introverts do take their time before speaking, that they do think deeply about things. However, he's also had to learn that you don't get to get into the deep stuff until you've earned the privilege of getting through some of the mundane small talk. And it's just been a very interesting process for us. And in the beginning, we actually did role playing because we would come home from parties and I would feel like, you are so rude. Like, you didn't bounce the ball back. So we had to learn, you know, he had to learn some tricks on how to actually carry along conversations that might not be so intense. So
well, Suzanne,
that's all great.
Well, that's great. I know. I love your story. And actually, I want to toss it to our psychologist, Lori Helgo. I mean, it sounds like they've been able to navigate and negotiate on this issue.
I love that. Yes, my husband's the extrovert in our pair. And so we've had similar conversations about conversations. And I loved Elizabeth's point about, you know, when somebody is nodding and waiting, an introvert, the extrovert thinks, oh, they love, you know, they want to hear more. And my husband has, it's amazing. We've been married 30 years, and I didn't realize that he often thought my silence was just an invitation to keep going, and I'm waiting for him to stop.
Exactly. Well, it sounds go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I think that exchange is so helpful because we do stretch ourselves for love. I mean, I've gone to parties for friends. I've endured, you know, the small talk. And honestly, I can say, I'd love to say that it was, you know, I found that I just loved small talk. No, but what I liked, because I stayed through the whole party, is afterwards, a few people actually had that deeper talk. And your point about, you know, that earning that right, earning the entry to the more interesting conversation is something sometimes introverts need to suck up and, you know, deal with.
Suzanne, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Elizabeth, I want to just pick up on something Chris talked about, how to exit a conversation. And if we're talking about small talk, a small talk conversation, do you have suggestions on how to do it, or is it pretty simple and straightforward?
I think he nailed it. You just, you know, you want to say, you know, it was very nice talking to you, and then, you know, you can gently back up, you know, very nice talking to you. I should let you get back to your evening. I don't want to hog your time if you're at a party. You know, I'm sorry I have to make this phone call. You know, you can have a little set excuse that's appropriate for the place. But I do think telling the other person, like, I enjoyed your company, is part of the art of it.
Right. Let me get to it. Looks like Stephanie from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to join our conversation. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I have a daughter who is 6 years old. She is an actress, and she has a very outgoing personality, and she's excellent at small talk. You know, for anything from, you know, what sport do you play, to I like your shoes. She can start up a conversation with anyone. And I'm just wondering what your guests think about kind of teaching small talk to children. And
well,
how that may help with just an introverted personality, period, you know?
Yes, I know. And I think we can hear your child speaking in the background there. Chris, do you have any suggestions for our caller, for Stephanie?
I think she should write a book about it. There's a lot of money to be made in conversation books.
Oh, interesting.
If she's got it figured out at the age of six, then she's set. No, I don't know. I don't know. I've got a kid who's almost six, and, you know, we struggle sometimes with the opposite, which is getting her to open up a little more. So I don't know. You know, I think the main thing is to be happy and have conversation come from a genuine place. And if your conversation is sort of connected with who you actually are inside and you're in sync that way, then you're in good shape, I think.
I mean, Laurie, and picking up on Stephanie's question, some people are just sort of natural extroverts and some are natural introverts. Should we try to change them one way or the other?
Well, I think that can be a trap. I think so often children are pushed to the one way of interacting, which is to be more openly talkative. And I think it is a gift. It sounds like your daughter's delightful, Stephanie. And I guess I also try to let parents know and children know that it's also a gift to be able to listen and to be able to entertain yourself and play quietly. and solitude skills are as important as social skills. So I think we can all, you know, learn more about both.
I mean, Elizabeth, do you think as a society we put more more value on being an extrovert?
I think the extroverts take over. I think we're loud. I'm an extrovert. I think we're just louder. We just take up more bandwidth. And so we forget. Like, we don't, it's not that the introverts necessarily are even shy. That's not a definition for shy, or that they don't have something to say. It's just they can't get any airtime. You know, we're too busy talking. And so, you know, I think that there is that. And I think that, you know, the huge amount of attention in the last few years to books about introverts and to just, you know, introversion has shown that, you know, there's a lot of people out there really, really resonated with this idea of, you know, who are we? We're introverts. What does that mean? So, yeah, I think it's when you're the quiet type, it, you know, it can be harder to have your say.
Well, and we're almost up on a break here, but are you comfortable, Elizabeth, with silence in conversations?
I am comfortable if I know the person. You know, if I'm comfortable, I'm certainly comfortable with it in some areas, but I guess if it was a certain things, if it was a job interview or, you know, a cocktail party where, you know, a few of us were just standing around awkwardly, I would definitely feel the need to fill that space, but I would try to fill it by drawing other people out.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Again, we are talking about small talk, how to do it, when it's appropriate, and perhaps the fact that not everyone needs to be able to do it. Talking with Elizabeth Bernstein, a columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Lori Helgo, a psychologist, author of Introvert Power, and Chris Collin. He teaches writing, and he's also co-author of a book called What to Talk About. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Chris Collin, Elizabeth Bernstein, and Lori Helgo about small talk. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Chris, I have an email for you. This is from Jeff. He says, I grew up in five different countries before moving to the U.S. at 15. People think they know who you are when they ask, where are you from? If I say planet Earth, only my tone indicates whether I'm a jerk or not. So what should I tell them?
I'm a big fan of ignoring questions you don't want to answer. I think that people are usually fine with that. They're just trying to get the conversation off the ground anyways. So, yeah, if you don't want to answer that, then just start talking about the thing you do want to talk about. It might seem weird for about half a second, but then they'll just pick up to with wherever you've taken things.
You like that idea, Elizabeth?
I do like that idea. I think that's that works very well in any situation if you don't like the question. I also, though, would say, you know, for this person who wrote in, here's an idea. You know, you're interesting. That's really interesting. So you might want to just say, you know, oh, gosh, not any one place. I lived in five different countries before I was 15 or whatever it is. So, you know, that is sort of interesting, too, not to necessarily be so overly critical of yourself that you don't want to share some information that might start the conversation going.
Lori, I have an email for you. This is Gary from Malvern. Says, I'm retired during most of my life. I hated small talk, especially to initiate it, but that has all changed in my old age. I've discovered how wonderful small talk has helped me to develop relationships with people in my community. So this is someone who didn't like small talk and has learned its value in his old age, as he says.
That's very interesting, and Carl Jung would have an explanation for that. He said that whatever our front and center personality style is through most of our lives in midlife, we often maybe get a little bored with that, and we want to try out some underused aspects of our personality. So it sounds like this man has done that quite effectively.
And I guess maybe makes sense in his age now, where he lives in a community and there are actual people to talk to that maybe share some of his interests. Let me get to Vicki from, looks like, Glenmore to join our conversation. Hi, Vicki, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Nope, we don't have Vicki. We have a tweet from Meg.
Hello?
Yeah, do we have you, Vicki?
Yes, I'm
okay,
here.
Okay, go ahead.
I find this whole conversation fascinating. I'm a talker. I love talking. My husband's an introvert, but we were just recently at a bed and breakfast where lots of small talk happens over the breakfast table, And we were just fascinated that the people on the other side of the table would not shut up about themselves. They just kept talking and talking and talking about their house, about their kids, about their lives, which we wanted to hear. But the conversation was never then turned to, oh, this is about us. Now let me hear about you. And I just feel like it's better to have a conversation where you turn it to the other person and ask them questions about themselves, because people love to talk about themselves. And as a listener, it's always nice to get the conversation going by having them talk about themselves, just as long as they return the favor sometimes.
Sure. And how were you able to extricate yourself from the conversation, Vicki?
You know, it didn't stop until the meal was over, and we had to politely excuse ourselves to go upstairs, or else we would just keep hearing about their lives and their lives and their lives, to the point where my husband and I still joke about it today, about the couple that kept talking about themselves. And we vow to never be like them. We will always turn the conversation to someone else, because it made us feel so uncomfortable.
Sure. Is there a name for that, Elizabeth?
I don't know, but that's definitely like almost a gift they gave you, that you still have that ability to like bond over it and laugh a little bit. And, you know, I guess the lesson is there too. So there's a little bit of an upside there to having to listen through that.
Chris, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think that's a great point that Elizabeth makes. I think whenever conversation goes south in any way, either because you've got B&B bloviators, or because you've put your foot in your mouth, or maybe you've just hit that awkward silence that you've been dreading, it's terrible for at the moment, but really you're paying it forward. It's a gift to yourself or to your conversation partner for the next one. They can talk about you know, this terrible boob they ended up talking with at that cocktail party.
We have an email from Lynn. As an introvert, I'd like to know when I should gracefully exit a conversation that's going well. That's interesting. Go ahead, Laurie.
Conversation that's going well.
Yes,
oh,
exactly.
Well, then, yeah, and that's, I think that's an easier one in a way, because you can be genuine with that statement that I've really enjoyed this and I need to go, and, you know, I'm going to be thinking about what we talked about. If it's somebody you want to have, you continue the conversation with, you can make plans for that. But I think that's the easier one. The conversation earlier about the couple that talked all the time, that's the kind of conversation where I really have to tell introverts it's time to use your least preferred card, which is to be abrupt. At some point, sometimes you have to just pull yourself out, because the people will not take social cues.
Right.
And at those points, talk can actually be abusive. There actually is a word for that kind of talk. Stephanie Dowrick, who wrote Intimacy and Solitude, calls these people exhausters.
Oh,
and
sure.
It is very draining for anybody, but particularly for introverts, to have somebody just keep on feeding you information.
Let me go back to you, Elizabeth, and we'll get back to our callers, because I'm thinking about those small talks, or that small talk that happens in groups. And I think sometimes that's easier than just kind of a one-on-one small talk situation.
I do think it's easier, because if you're not so comfortable with small talk, hopefully there'll be somebody else in that group that can carry it. You know, if you're lucky, there's one person who can sort of almost host that little small talk and get people going and draw them out. And even if you're, all standing there kind of awkwardly, you know, marching through this talk or, you know, struggling through it, maybe at some point, you know, going back to what Chris had said earlier, couldn't you just admit, like, look, like, gosh, this is just so awkward. Like, don't you hate this? Like, and then maybe, you know, come up with one of your better questions, as he's saying, like something that's real. Don't you hate this? Let's talk about, you know, what's the funniest thing, you know, you saw on Facebook today or something. So, or don't you hate Facebook? Whatever it is. So I think that it is easier, and hopefully maybe there's some group interaction you can almost play off of.
Let me get Barbara from Maple Glen to join our conversation. Barbara, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, this is a fun show.
Good.
Thanks. So my question is, what do you do when you don't actually want to talk? I mean, so I'm extroverted and I enjoy conversations, but maybe I'm at an event and I'm supporting somebody at the event or the cause, and I'm at a table of people that I don't know, and maybe we're just different backgrounds, generations, and I'm just at a complete loss, and since I have no rapport with them, you know, asking them how they start the day maybe isn't quite the right question. Or it could be somebody who I see at family events who's like a relative of a relative, and then we always do the same small talk, and I can't ever quite remember, you know, what we talked about the last time, and you feel like you just kind of run dry. How do you handle that?
I mean, Barbara, what I hear is that you're actually not interested in the people that you're talking to. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, ideally I'm interested, but yeah, sometimes maybe I'm just not interested in the small talk, or I don't know what I would be interested about the person. And so if I've got an interest in them, then I can pursue that. But if I'm sort of running, like, I can't think of, you know, where I can go with it.
Sure. No, I hear
you. And it's not a flattering way to speak for me to be speaking right now, but you know, sometimes that happens, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, you're not alone in it at all. Chris, I'm going to toss that first to you.
Is
it a matter of just kind of faking it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I think there's times when we really don't want to talk, and then you just got to put the signal out. You know, I found that if I put my hands over my ears and I rock back and forth, people tend to leave me alone.
But, that always works for me.
But you can also have things in your back pocket. Yeah, I mean, in general, I'm an advocate of trying to move conversation to a more candid and real place. But I think there's also nothing wrong with having something sort of ready to go, some canned material. And, for example, here's something that might be a little different from what you normally do, Barbara. If you don't really feel like talking about yourself or your whoever you're talking with, you know, talk about some neutral third party or thing. There's a game that I recommend in situations like that. Let's say you're at a party, you know, sort of point over at two people over by the window over there and you say, hey, let's just guess what they're talking about right now, or let's write a screenplay about those two people. And it's sort of, you know, of course it's a little wacky, but in my experience, people tend to be game for things more than we sometimes think, and they're up for sort of odd little things like that, and it makes it a little more memorable, and it takes the pressure off you. You don't have to talk about your day or how you're doing.
I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Barbara, let me get, looks like Mary to join our conversation. Mary from Wilmington, Delaware. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
In reference to the conversation about the people that wouldn't shut up talking about themselves,
yeah.
I was reminded when I was a kid, I came home from school one time and my mother kept asking me questions and I would grunt answers. And she finally said, Mary, conversation is a ball. Toss it back.
Toss it back and forth, right?
That awesome.
Well, let me, Mary, see what Lori has to say about that. A good way to think about a conversation?
I didn't hear all of the callers' statements.
It's actually quite simple, which is her mom said to her, think of a conversation like a ball, toss it back.
Uh-huh, yeah. You know, there's an exercise that it was done at a workshop where it's to help extroverts and introverts understand each other better. And not only was the ball tossed to the introvert, but then the introvert puts it in a bucket, picks it back up and tosses it back. And extroverts had to do the same, and it was very frustrating for them because they had to recognize that before bouncing it back, introverts need to dip inside. And I was thinking about the caller's statement about, you know, what do I do when I don't want to talk? And I really advocate, a cultural shift where can we practice being silent? And, you know, that this pressure to talk really undermines conversation. And, you know, to be able to have a conversation, we need to both be in touch with another person and with ourselves. And especially for introverts, that's hard to do simultaneously unless silence is a part of it.
Elizabeth, let me go back to you. And again, I keep using your expertise at the Wall Street Journal. How about small talk with the boss?
Small talk with the boss is probably one of the most stressful things for many, many people. You're thinking, what am I going to say? I'm going to put my foot in my mouth. I might reveal too much about myself. He or she's going to think I'm an idiot, whatever it is. And so it can be very very difficult. I think it's also to remember that the boss is probably finds it a little stressful too, because the stakes are a little higher. Like, they don't also want to embarrass themselves. They won't, you know, probably want to keep some privacy. They want to be seen as somebody who cares about you, hopefully, if they're a decent boss. So, you know, I think maybe just thinking, like, they're just a person. This is a person, and, you know, we work with each other every day, and, you know something probably about them. So, hey, how are the kids? You know, did you get out this weekend to do anything fun? Like, just maybe to have some of those back pocket questions. And for me, when going back to the idea of what do you talk about when you have, you know, nothing, you just think, I cannot think of anything to say to this person. I'm frankly really not that interested. You know, I try to go to the immediate surroundings and maybe compliment them on something that they're wearing or something like that, genuinely, if there's something there that you that caught your eye. Or, you know, isn't this a beautiful room this event's been held in? Isn't this the ugliest room you've ever seen in your life? It, you know, can you believe they keep it so freezing? Whatever it is, just, you know, making just sort of a comment, again, that's not really about anything yet that might be drawing them out, but just something to get the ball rolling, really. So if the ball is going to be tossed in back and forth, somebody in a small talk situation is going to need to sort of, you know, have the serve.
Chris, do you think small talk is easier online?
I guess it is. You, like, sort of like a chat kind of thing?
Like a chat kind of thing?
Yeah, I reckon. I mean, you know, you can at least not be responsible for what your face is doing. That takes up
that helps, right?
A lot of energy, yeah.
And it's sort of in your own time and space and place as well, right?
Yeah.
Elizabeth,
yeah, no, I think we all think of things, you know, after the fact, of course, that we wish we had said in a certain moment. And if you're online, you can pretend like you're you had to go turn off the tea kettle when, in fact, you were frantically thinking of the right thing to say. Yeah.
Well, on that note, we do have to end our conversation. Chris Cullen, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, co-author of What to Talk.
Oh, wait, I meant to say it's been so nice talking with you.
Yeah, so nice talking with you as well.
That's how we end.
There you go. Co-author of What to Talk About. Lori Hilgo, thank you very much as well.
Thanks so much, Marty. I enjoyed it.
I did it as well. And her book is called Introvert Power. And Elizabeth Bernstein, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really nice.
It was fun for us as well, and I ain't lying about that. And she's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Diana Martinez, Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Quinn Libson is our intern, and the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we want to close things out with some music. And this is Small Talk by Ultra Ista, remixed by Fortet.